Welcome to Diving Into Crypto.
Diving Into Crypto.
A weekly series where thought leaders share insights, strategies, and insider stories about all things crypto and Web3. Brought to you by Adlunum.
Hey, hey, welcome to Diving Into Crypto. This is your host, Jason Fernandez, co-founder at Adlunum. This program is about sharing insights, strategies, and journeys of thought leaders, movers, shakers, and candlestick watchers. So this program is brought to you by Adlunum, the all-in-one Web3 investment ecosystem powering early-stage startups from tokenomics to community growth, VC fundraising to IDO launches, and our unique EngageShore platform. We are transforming the way that investors experience the world of Web3 investing and dynamic NFTs through our monthly Web3 pitch arena. We're bridging the gap of innovative startups and venture capital. So let's dive right into it. Before we begin, here are a few announcements. Views on this program are that of the speaker, and the thoughts shared are meant for educational purposes alone. Feel free to use the reaction buttons as you hear gems from our speakers. At the end of the program, we will open the room for Q&As from the audience. Your questions can be sent across to our Twitter account at Adlunum Inc. Today's guest is a very special guest from OnRamp.Money, Chandan Kumar, the founder. Chandan is building OnRamp.Money, a global fiat to crypto solutions provider, integrating the MetaMask, Coinbase wallet, etc., and live in over 40 countries, including Vietnam, India, UAE, Brazil, Turkey, Eurozone, Nigeria, etc. Okay, without further ado, Chandan, would you like to say hello and maybe introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here and nice to be with you again, Jason. Again, long time. Yeah, so a little bit about myself. So I'm an engineer by education. Worked in IT for a while, then got into markets like oil trading, stock markets, etc. Did that for over a decade. And around 8 years ago, I got to know about Bitcoin and Ethereum. And here I am. Yeah.
So how did you really get into crypto? I know, by the way, it's really great to chat again. It's been quite a few years, I think, since you last spoke. But yeah, I mean, how did you really get into crypto? What was that? How's that journey been for you? What was the moment where that switch flipped?
Yeah, so I was, like I said, I was trading oil futures on US markets for over a decade. So it was essentially global markets. But for some reason, even though I had heard about Bitcoin, I didn't really experiment with it, right? But one of my neighbors bought Ethereum, and then my antenna went up. Like, if this crypto story has been repeated, right? We had Bitcoin, now we have another new crypto on the block, right? So I went and attended a few meetups, saw the folk over there, and almost immediately realized that there's a new generation of users and builders, etc., who are going to be doing only crypto. Like, they don't want to do anything with the other industries which are in place right now. So that's when read up the Bitcoin white paper, etc., and gradually started doing advisory, etc.
Wow! And specifically, OnRamp.Money. How did that? What was the genesis of that? I mean, kind of from advising companies to getting into sort of founding your own. How did that sort of come about? What was it like getting, you know, your team together?
Right. So, one of the companies I started advising was a major Indian exchange again. And I've been involved for the last few years. And in the exchange, we are always looking at new stuff which is happening in the industry, right? And gradually we realized that more and more users are probably going to move to on-chain applications. And over time, probably they're going to bypass exchanges altogether. So we saw that happening when Uniswap and Aave integrated fiat on-ramp on their UI. So that was a flag in our mind. We studied the industry. So we saw that there were players like Banksa and Moonpay, which are already there in the market. At the same time, when we did a deep dive, we realized that there's a gap in the market where there was no fiat on-ramp provider which was working on banking rails. So all the fiat on-ramp back then were built on Visa and MasterCard again. And from India, we know how dominant instant banking is, right? So we use mainly UPI. So that's where we built this product, Bootstrap, initially, and then we made it into an independent entity and independent project.
So it sounds like you launched this as sort of a response to the Indian market and the lack of ability sort of to get fiat onto sort of in exchanges. So how did that evolve into sort of serving, you know, the global market? And one of the things that I was curious about was, you know, when you start talking about on-ramp, like the biggest thing is, you know, the regulations around on-ramping of funds. So how do you deal with that, like both nationally, and then also now you're international, and you know you have to be compliant in multiple different.
Right. So you rightly mentioned that initially we started off in India, mainly on UPI, which accounts for 80% of the transactions in India. Gradually, when we started researching even the fiat payment industry globally, right, we realized that many emerging countries, let's say Vietnam, Kenya, Brazil, etc., right, they have their own version of instant banking or mobile wallets. Then we thought, why not expand it globally, right? And we had a few guys in the fiat team like who work ruthlessly at getting us access globally. And right now we are operational around 40 countries and everywhere on banking rails or mobile wallets.
So what are the sort of unique challenges you deal with providing, you know, I mean, fiat to crypto solutions in 40 basically different countries, I believe, right? Like, how do you sort of address those? Like, what are the sort of challenges that you have, you know, essentially having these interoperable across vast, you know, regulatory bodies, regulatory regions, and then also, you know, geographic?
Right. So the biggest challenge is, of course, banking access. Everywhere, right? Because if you're in crypto, getting banking access is either not easy or is very expensive, right? So that's why we had this incumbent fiat on-ramp providers who are using Visa and MasterCard, but those were extremely expensive. So again, we went geography by geography. Our team spoke to the local partners over there. In some cases, we use even exchanges, regulated exchanges in some geographies. In some geographies, like we have our own entity and our own bank accounts. So whatever worked in those geographies, we made it live. And on the liquidity front, we have an integrated USDT liquidity layer. So the fiat layer is ring-fenced in each geography. But on the liquidity front, we have a global liquidity pool. So that's how the product is built.
So how do you manage sort of the currency conversions and ensure, you know, competitive rates across users in different regions? I mean, because you have people essentially from multiple different countries accessing the same, you know, the same rails. And of course, they're accessing it from depending on which region they're accessing it from, they're going to use a different fiat on-ramp.
Right. So one of the good things about using banking rails is you can do off-ramp relatively easier. So users want off-ramp money in their bank accounts, right? They don't want the money in their Visa and MasterCard, right? So that gave us a big advantage. So in many countries, we have both on-ramp and off-ramp active. This allows us to ring-fence each geography. So we match the liquidity locally in that geography again. And for altcoins, etc., we use the USDT versus the local liquidity pool, the global liquidity pool again. And so that's how the product is built, that the USDT liquidity in effect is local. We try to match it as far as possible using the on-ramp and off-ramp volumes. And for the tokens, we try to use the global liquidity pool.
Amazing. And so, you know, how do you guys handle things like security, and what are the sort of security measures around, you know, building something like that? And how do you guys, you know, prioritize security to sort of safeguard, you know, assets and data and so on.
Right. So the main goal of the product is to offer the lowest cost option. Right? So in many geographies, if you see, like we almost 8 In some geographies like UAE, etc., we are almost 8% lower spread as compared to Banksa, Moonpay, etc., because we use banking rails. At the same time, because we use banking rails, we have to adhere to the local regulations in those countries, the banking regulations, right? And the common regulations globally are that each user needs to have done the eKYC and you have to enforce the AML checks. That is, the money you receive in a bank account has to come from the same individual who's done the KYC. Right? So these are two things which we enforce globally. And in some geographies, there are other things which we have to do. Let's say we have to take the user's bank account, etc. Again, so again, effectively, whatever local partners and banks want us to do, we follow that. And what we think is that if you can get the users who are essentially investors, who are looking for the lowest cost option, then they would be willing and do all of this.
Understood. And so just out of curiosity, I noticed, I mean, I was really excited to see that you guys partnered with MetaMask. Like, how did that kind of come about? And sort of how is that partnership work? Is that massively, like, does that, do they support you in multiple countries? Because I remember the announcement was for India specifically. But, you know, do you support them in multiple countries now? Or kind of how did that whole relationship come about?
Right. So we started, if you remember, MetaMask was one of our earliest integrations which went live. Again, started off in India. So now we are live in MetaMask in multiple geographies. So we are live in MetaMask even in countries like Brazil, Vietnam, UAE, etc. Again, and the entire Eurozone. So if you go to, let's say, France or Germany, in MetaMask under banking, you'd find us live over there. So, and how the integration happened was India was MetaMask's biggest mobile market after the US again. So we spoke to them. We explained to them that if you want to be active in India, you need UPI access, right? And we had UPI access. So that was the start of the integration. And once we got into the project, like in Coinbase Wallet as well, we're live in multiple countries. So adding more countries was not very difficult.
And sort of, how do you envision sort of crypto accessibility for users worldwide? I mean, is it massively different across different geographies, or are certain countries, do they have, you know, a leg up in this new world? Or like, what would you say from your opinion, but especially working across, you know, different regions?
So most other countries which we have made live have been recent additions. Like around October or so, we made many countries live. So we are still exploring and studying those markets. So in some countries, gaming is big. In some countries, meme coins is big. Some countries, stable coins is big again. So again, it depends. Like each country has a different user base and a profile again. And we're working with influencers, affiliates, ambassadors in those countries. And one difference is that in many countries, banking is not really a problem for crypto entities. It's more a game of which project you can get integrated into, what kind of users can you get on your platform, etc. Okay.
Understood. And where do you think, you know, the sort of on-ramp, off-ramp industry could evolve? I'm just curious, like, what are the ancillary industries within crypto you think that, you know, that this could evolve into or help advance somewhat? I'm just curious, like, what would be the, for example, what would be the role with on-ramping and off-ramping when it comes to sort of some of this new DeFi instruments we see out?
Right. So on the high level, what we see is the way the Web2 user base increased in the emerging markets, right? So let's say East Asia, India, etc., Africa. So Web3 also, we see the same thing happening. So that's why we have made a product live in these countries, like Africa as well, we are live now. So Nigeria is live, South Africa is live, etc. And when I go to events, I see that there are builders from all over the world, right? So you could have a dApp which has emerged from anywhere in the world and which, like, almost instantly has a global user base, right? So I think we are seeing the start of a new economy being built on the blockchain, where the platform itself is global. Fiat on-ramp and off-ramp will probably be local for a long long while until maybe we get stable coins as the default monetary layer again.
Interesting. And I you know, a lot of people come into crypto sort of from a philosophical perspective or a political perspective, where they have these sort of core beliefs where, you know, crypto is sort of like they believe crypto is there for freedom, or, you know, maybe that they believe that money shouldn't be tracked. I'm just curious if you had any of those sort of beliefs, and what is your, like, the personal philosophy that sort of drives your own, you know, work in this industry and perhaps with the on-ramp money?
Yeah, so as an infra layer, we try to accept, like, any market as it evolves, right? So, and over the course of years as well. So let's say started off with Bitcoin, then we had Ethereum, L2s, etc., NFTs, RWAs, all sorts of things, right? Meme coins again. So few things, of course. So we think as the blockchain, etc., infrastructure becomes more institutionalized and stable, we'll see RWAs explode. Like BlackRock has already started that again. And so RWAs is one area, of course. Then many more use cases like remittance, right? So there's an obvious advantage of using stable coins for international payments. So remittance, international merchant flows, etc. We'll also have growth area in meme coins, gaming, NFTs, right? So overall, I think the industry is going to be much bigger in a decade or so, by orders of magnitude.
Okay, and I'm just curious how you sort of, what you think about people, what do you think the best way for people to navigate, you know, the whole situation where they want crypto, but it's restricted in that country? Like, what would you recommend? And then also, in terms of regulation, like, which country do you think, like, based off of your experience, has been the most difficult to deal with and to comply with regulation-wise from your experience?
Yeah, so we also run an exchange, right? So we are used to interacting with regulators and working with them. So I think what we have seen is that maybe from the outside, it looks like regulation is not easy. But on the ground, regulators are also trying to learn about the industry. And most regulators are quite open-minded about it. So it's more a case of them getting educated about it, we working with them closely again. Following the regulations. So even in India, we've seen, like, now we have FIU with all the crypto entities have to register. And then there are reporting requirements. And at our end, we have to follow. So let's say if the user tries to withdraw into a wallet which has a history of being involved in some gray activity, right? Then it gets flagged, and in some cases, it might even get reported. So I think most regulators have accepted that the industry is here to stay. It's going to create jobs. So most governments, again, are encouraging the industry. Like, even in the US, we saw, right? So at some point, it was not, after the FTX incident, it was not an easy environment. But now we have the ETFs, right, which has just, like, expanded the market multifold, right? So overall, I think it's looking really good right now, both in terms of adoption and job creation, economic activity, etc.
So you would say that, like, regulators are taking a sort of sincere approach to try to figure out what's the easiest way forward. Has there been a solution for this whole TDS issue that's happening in India, which I know has caused, exchanges to drop in volumes, like everywhere in India? All the exchanges had a massive drops in volume because of this, the new law around, not new, it's been a year and some change now, law around, you know, tax deducting that source and sort of how the accounting regulations are around that.
Yeah, so volumes have gone, because if you're an active investor in the market, right, it's a big cost. But for investors, for long-term investors, it's not really an issue right now. So we see, we have guys, let's say, who bought Bitcoin at much lower levels, or they do dollar cost averaging in Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc., and just hold it, right? And we have a few investors who say, I'm going to hold it until the regime improves. So let's say until we get income tax regime, which is at par with other asset classes, right? So I think that is still a problem in India. It plays on investors' mind. volumes have moved to exchanges outside India. And now we see regulators also trying to stop that, right? So URLs getting banned, apps getting banned, etc. So I think all this is part of evolution of the industry. So we work with the government, we try to engage with them. And hopefully at some point we'll see a lowering of the rates as well.
So I'm just curious. That's I hope that that's true. I used to be at an exchange in India, and it was just completely a nightmare to deal with. So I'm just curious in terms of APIs and development. What role do APIs play in allowing developers to integrate on ramp services into their website? And what kind of sort of integrations are possible? And what are the sort of integrations that you guys are targeting right now in terms of to sort of expand your business?
Right. So we have a number of integration options. So we have a widget integration, which is the easiest way to integrate the product into a project, which MetaMask, etc. have done. We have SDKs as well. So JavaScript SDKs, React Native SDKs, again, for a deeper integration. And now we also have pure API integration, which is like a white label integration. In which the platform can integrate the endpoints natively into the app, etc. The user only interacts with the platform's UI, and the platform itself interacts with us on the backend. So now we have all the options, all the standard options available. And depending on the UX the project wants for its users, they can choose from among these options.
So what would you say is the role of sort of centralized exchanges in this situation? Because if you disconnect the on ramping and off ramping from the transaction volume, essentially you can have a DEX that has essentially an on ramp and that competes pretty much on equal footing with an actual SEC, for example.
So I think overall the market is growing, right? So we have roles for both. So I think exchanges, still for many of the tokens, they have the most liquid order books. Like the USDT liquidity, especially on many exchanges, is extremely good. Again, we have the local exchange as well. So on-chain exchange also, we are seeing the volumes going up a lot. And that is a priority for us. Like we are integrated into Osmosis DEX. We are getting integrated into many of the other exchanges as well, on-chain as well as off-chain again. So I think there's a role for everything. Of course, the DEX volume, I think, is growing at much more as compared to the volumes on the older exchanges. But overall, the exchanges are here to stay, and especially as the world becomes more local, right? So now the regulators expect even the exchanges that they would have to register with the local entities. And if DEX becomes very big, then the regulators might expect even them to register with the local regulators at some point. So that's what we think.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I know you mentioned, you sort of mentioned gray wallets earlier. So I'm curious, have you come across any sort of interesting cases? What's sort of the craziest thing you heard, on that note? I'm just wondering if, any accounts have you ever had, an issue where an account has been frozen or you've been needed to freeze an account and things like that?
So on the wallet side, because we have a lot of on-chain information already, right? We have a history of which wallets have been involved in illicit activity, etc., real time, more or less real time. So that's, I would say, the easier part. If you see a wallet which has a history, it gets flagged immediately and the withdrawal itself gets stopped. And many cases, we ask the user for an alternate wallet address. On the fiat side, we have a number of stuff which happens even in normal banking channels. So let's say the user makes a deposit from somebody else's account or some guy raised money from investors and then is trying to buy USDT, etc., on a platform, right? So I think all the issues with which a regular exchange also has, we also see all those things. And because of our exchange background, I think we are really well placed to handle that. So right out of the box, we had many of these things in place, which are being improved daily.
Well, can you share with us some, you know, interesting stories? Because everybody wants to hear about, you know, like how it is that people's accounts get blocked, or like you know, how do you identify whether, let's say, a wallet is an Al-Qaeda wallet or something like that?
So let's say if the user is trying to buy crypto, right? And we see that a new user on day one itself is trying to buy a very heavy volume, right? So that user may be asked for the bank statement, etc. again. And if they're not able to explain their income via the bank statement, then we go for a deeper investigation. So that's one case in which, let's say, the withdrawal might take a while, again, until the verification is completed. There are other cases. So let's say we see multiple users withdrawing money into the same wallet, right? So they are buying USDT, Ethereum, etc. And the flow is going into one wallet. Then again, it gets flagged. Like, we try to understand what kind of wallet is it, like, because it could be a scam kind of wallet. Again, so I think there are many instances like this. Again. And most of these are flagged automatically by the system. In some cases, we have manual risk managers as well who watch the transaction and the patterns, etc.
So when it comes to unwrapped-up money and like sort of, you know, your growth so far into, you know, what you are today, I'm just curious, what do you think the sort of major milestones have been that have, you know, been able to help you achieve this sort of this growth? And because, I mean, MetaMask is, you know, everybody knows MetaMask is a household name practically, certainly in the crypto space. So I'm just curious how you grew so quickly, and what are some of the sort of main achievements?
So I think there are a few building blocks in this. So one of the building blocks is accepting the fiat into your bank account. Right? So that layer has to run with 100% efficiency or SLAs. Liquidity management is another, right? So if you see our list of cryptos, we have almost all the cryptos which are available on the major exchanges and across multiple chains. So let's say USDT is available over 18 chains, etc. So again, like, the expertise there, like being able to run those nodes, multi-chain infrastructure. Then the regulatory part is a very, very important ask here. So both on the AML side, EKYC side at the user level, on the wallet withdrawal level, on the flaggings, etc. again. So I think when you're building a product like this, and if you want to make it into a global product, right from the beginning, you have to ensure that all the building blocks are in place. And how that is implemented is you get the experts in-house, right? So for each of these, the risk team, we have like really good guys. On the fiat angle also, we have like guys who have deep experience in this. Founders are those who have experience in running an exchange, right? On the BD side as well. So integration as well, we have really good guys who have worked in the industry for a long time, worked with projects. No folk in the industry. So I think like it's all over the place. Like all the building blocks have to be managed independently and with very high standards.
So I'm just curious, if you were to go back and sort of give yourself advice, you know, at the beginning of your career in crypto, what would you say? Would you have sort of done things differently, or how would you have sort of evolved this?
Yes, I think, of course, have bought more Bitcoin, right? I mean, if you go back in time, like anyone would say you'd buy more Bitcoin, but that's not that's kind of a hindsight analysis. So I think one of the things which I would go back is I missed the entire meme coin rally, right? So in general, having an open mind would be very helpful. So even if it's something like meme coins, etc., right? Because the end of the day, it's about user adoption. So just having an open mind, and when in doubt, go and meet the folk who are actually doing it. So go to attend more events, etc. Meet the folk who are actually doing the stuff on the ground.
It sounds like you're saying you wish you bought more Doge.
Yes. Yeah, because I know a guy. I know a guy who bought an Audi using by mining Doge. Yes. Yeah, so there are N ways to make money again.
It's almost like dirty money if you do it that way, right? It's almost like drug money or something, it feels like.
But end of the day,
you can't get money this way. Buying Doge, not acceptable, no.
Right, yeah.
So can you tell us a bit about sort of on-ramp money sort of track record, like, you know, good case stories, like learning case stories, sort of that sort of thing? I know we touched a little bit about like learnings before, but specifically with sort of building on-ramp money, because, you know, you're talking about regulation, you're talking about like crypto exchanges. So let's say somebody is setting up a crypto exchange now in India, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, so I think the environment now is that you have to work very closely with the regulators. So FIU has a very easy registration process now. They have monthly meetings even if you're not registered. So I think the step one would be, if you're running an exchange, then step one is to work with the regulators. So I think you have to understand what the regulators want, and if you have the expertise and the infra, etc., which allow you to do that. So that is, and that's, I think, the requirement in almost every geography right now.
So what does the next year look like for you? I mean, what's on the pipeline for OnRamp in terms of like new products, and what do you guys have, you know, in the line to launch?
Right. So we have OnRamp live around 40 countries. We have OffRamp live in around 8 countries right now. So every 2 weeks, you'll see one country have OffRamp enabled. We are increasing the number of countries. So as I said earlier, we're live in East Asia, India, Middle East, Africa, LATAM, and Europe. So we'll be adding the missing countries soon, including the United States again. And once we have both OnRamp and OffRamp live, we can potentially have many other applications which can be built on our layer. Like remittance is one case, right? So let's say an Indian working in UAE, they can do instant remittance into their Indian bank account and so on. So you have merchant flows, cross-border merchant flows, we have remittance flows, etc., which are possible. So the end goal for us is to build this alternate money Lego, which is like a replacement for Visa and MasterCard, in which, like, using the blockchain for cross-border makes it lower cost and much more efficient as compared to the existing banking system for international layer. At the local layer, we have the instant banking, etc., which already are very efficient, again. So at the local level, we want to use that. So that's the end goal for us, and also for the next 1 year.
Okay. Yeah, I think we had a little technical difficulty there, but so how do you see the future of the Web3 and crypto industry? Like, what do you think is? I know we mentioned sort of what's next for OnRamp, but I'm curious where you see the industry going at large.
Right. So I think the way we look at it is that the industry is going to become more of an infra layer now. So, for example, in the Web2 world, we saw AWS, etc., right? So over time, it became infra layer on which you could build application, right? Anyone could build an application. So a blockchain is becoming the same again. And like mentioned earlier, like BlackRock is going to launch funds on blockchain, right? So that will allow them to expand globally, right? Right now, they are a US-specific fund again. So many use cases like that, like real world assets, the thing is going to explode. We'll have, again, instruments like meme coins, etc., which will explode. So entertainment stuff, etc. Gaming is another industry which is ripe to move on chain. So it's an extremely fragmented industry right now. But globally, it's a huge industry. So instead of going to the fiat layer, if gaming companies are trying to move to crypto, where the user brings in the crypto, plays with it and then withdraws crypto back, right? So that's one huge industry. And of course, I think there are many things which we can't even imagine right now. In crypto, we've seen that the reality is always wilder than even our wildest expectations, right? So that's probably going to be the case.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
So I'm curious, so you mentioned remittances as one of the sort of use cases for your technology. Is that something that you guys would build out yourself, or is that something you would partner with another company to sort of use your rails to build out?
So we'll probably only provide the infra layer for that, because they're already experts in the market who understand that industry much better. Like globally, it's a huge, the annual remittance volume runs into hundreds of billions of dollars again. And we already have players who are the industry. And for them, if they move to crypto, they will immediately see better efficiencies and higher speed. So we are already in talks with some remittance players again, and they sound very interested in this as well. So most likely it will be those partners building it, not us.
Understood. Yeah, that sort of makes the most sense. So do you have any closing thoughts? I mean, we're getting close to the end here. I know a lot of people are wondering when Bitcoin will hit 100K. So curious about that, and then also if you had any closing thoughts.
Right. So just to give you a small story. So in the early weeks of OnRamp, like I used to do mainly BD calls, and one particular day I had 8 calls. And end of day, I realized that I've spoken to folk from 11 nations, right? So starting from Australia in the morning and the West Coast, US West Coast at the end of the day. So I think the industry, that's what the industry for me is. It's a multicultural industry. And we are seeing the birth of a global economy, right? Like blockchain economy, again, from all over the world. So I think like whoever is in the industry right now, whoever is entering the industry is going to really enjoy it over the next few years and decades.
Yeah, no, I agree, Chandan. I think that, you know, this is such a unique industry that's so, it's so international in scope. But I think it's one of the few industries where you have almost no bar really on your geographical location. So I think that's one of the beauties of our crypto. I mean, even stock, for example, like you can't really buy, you know, U.S. stocks in India, for example, easily, and there's all sorts of restrictions. Whereas with crypto, you can pretty much, you know, buy it worldwide. So yeah, I think this sort of brings us towards the end of this Twitter Spaces. So thank you very much for your time, Chandan. Really great chatting with you again. It's been a while, and thank you so much.
Appreciate you hosting me. Yeah, Jason. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. We'll be here same time next week, and over and out.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Diving Into Crypto, proudly hosted by Ad Lunam, the first engage-to-earn platform with a proof-of-attention model and dynamic NFT investor profiles.